Boy, what a great theme this year. We are going to be steadfast. We're going to be unmovable. And we're always going to be abounding in the work of the Lord, the work that God gives us to do. And as we think about the words that the apostles give us, we understand this determination that we have. In 1 Timothy, the 6th chapter, at verse 12, the apostle said to Timothy, fight the good fight of faith. Philippians, the 1st chapter, at verse 17, the apostle reflects on his own life, and he says, I'm set for the defense of the gospel. No matter what happens, no matter what befalls me, and there were a lot of things that happened in the apostle's life, Paul said, I'm set for the defense of the gospel. In the third verse of the short book of Jude, Jude says, earnestly contend for the faith. 1 Corinthians, the 16th chapter, at verse 13, real unusual wording in the King James translation, says, watch ye, stand fast in the faith. Quit you like men, be strong. Quit you like men. That's an odd kind of phrase, isn't it? It's, we wouldn't use that wording. We would probably say, acquit yourself like a man. Be what God needs in this world. Some pictures that I ran across this week. It's something that happened at the Mall of America. Man came into the mall and he was wearing that t-shirt. You know what happened? Told him he had to leave. He said, wait a minute, I'm standing up. I am being a man. This is my commitment. Now, it must be said that I don't have a t-shirt that looks like that. I don't know anybody that does. But is that the way that we ought to acquit ourselves to be men? Is that the way that Jude says we ought to contend for the faith? Is that the way that the Apostle Paul said, I'm set for the defense of the gospel? Well, let's think about that. Try to understand some of what is built up in this idea of defending what's right. As we think about this, it occurs to me that when Isaiah talked about the Messiah, he talked about him in ways that are at least a little bit surprising. I might have thought that when the Messiah came, he would come with a shout. I might have thought that he would take his place and he would stand undeniably for what's right. And I'm sure that he did. But when the Messiah, who came to the world to save man from sin, came into the world, he didn't shout it in the streets. Isaiah, the 42nd chapter, beginning at verse 42, or beginning at verse 2. He says of the Messiah, he shall not cry, nor lift up, nor cause his voice to be heard in the street. A bruised reed he will not break. Smoking flax he'll not quench. He shall bring forth judgment unto truth. Now, what that tells me is I don't have to wear a shirt like that fella did. When I don't wear that shirt, I don't think I'm letting God down. The kingdom of Christ is not political. It's not organized armies. It's not organized protest marches. 2 Corinthians, the 10th chapter, verse 3 beginning, the apostle says it this way. Though we walk in the flesh, we do not war after the flesh. The weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. We fight not the way the world fights. Not looking like we're protesting. That's why Christians don't march in the streets and burn down half of Eugene. It's why Christians see evil around us and we do not respond that way. But we still defend the faith. We still defend what's right. I want you to think with me about 1 Corinthians, the 5th chapter, beginning at verse 9. It's an important idea. He says, I wrote unto you in my letter to stop associating with people who are sexually immoral. Not at all meaning people of this world who are immoral, greedy, robbers, idolaters. In that case, if you weren't going to associate with anybody that was an idolater, you'd have to go out of the world. But now I'm writing to you to stop associating with any so-called brother if he's sexually immoral, greedy, an idolater, a slanderer, a drunk, or a robber. You must even stop eating with someone like that. After all, is it my business to judge outsiders? You're to judge those who are in the community, aren't you? God will judge outsiders. Expel that wicked man. Now I know who he was talking about, man. That was a part of that church there in Corinth that had his father's wife. The apostle says you have to expel him. You cannot have anything to do with him. You have to stand up and be counted. But notice he's talking about a man who is among their number. He's not talking about going to the mall and confronting everybody that was in the mall with their sin. But he says something different when it's a person who knows better. I think it's important that we understand that we need to pick our battles wisely. I said yesterday, I had never talked about Genesis 34. It was one of the stories that we read this last month as we were reading through the chronological Bible. So I want to begin reading with Genesis 34. And we're going to read about Dinah. And we're going to read about two of the other sons that Jacob had. Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had borne to Jacob, that's Old Testament, of course, Leah is the wife that he got, even though he was trying to get Rachel. Remember that story? Anyway, Leah bears him a daughter named Dinah. Interestingly, she's one of the few women that's mentioned in the genealogies that we read. When Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, the prince of the land where Israel or Jacob was living at that time, saw her, he seized her, he laid with her, and he humiliated her. We'd have said it that a lot more simply, he raped her. And his soul was drawn to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob. He loved the young woman, spoke tenderly to her. So Shechem spoke to his father Hamor, and he said, "Give me this girl for myself." Now Jacob heard that he had defiled his daughter Dinah. But Jacob's sons were with his livestock in the field, so Jacob held his peace until they came. Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak with him. The sons of Jacob had come in from the field as soon as they heard of it, and the men were indignant, very angry, because he had done an outrageous thing in Israel by lying with Jacob's daughter. Such a thing must not be done. That was true then. It's still true today. This man, Shechem, raped Dinah. Jacob is incensed. His sons are incensed. And they're going to do something about it. Hamor spoke with them, saying, "The soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. Please give him to be his wife. Make marriages with us. Give your daughters to us. Take our daughters for yourselves. You shall dwell with us, and the land will be open to you. Dwell in it and trade in it and get property in it." Shechem also said to her father, to Jacob, and to her brothers, "Let me find favor in your eyes. Whatever you say to me, I will give. Ask me for a great bride price or a dowry, and I will, gift as you would." Let me read that again. "Ask me for as great a bride price and gift as you will." Boy, that's hard to read for me. "I'll give you whatever you say to me. Only give me the young woman to be my wife." The sons of Jacob answered Shechem and his father Hamor deceitfully because they defiled their sister Dinah. They said to them, "We cannot do this thing to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for that would be a disgrace to us." So you know what they said? "Shechem, you and all the men of this country are going to have to be circumcised. That's what we ask." So Shechem went back to the men in the country and he explained the situation to them, convinced them that they ought to be circumcised. And they did. And while they were recovering from their circumcision, Simeon and Levi and all of the rest of the brothers, apparently, went and did battle. They killed them all. They couldn't fight. They were recovering from surgery. They did battle. They killed them all. Then Jacob has a discussion with his sons. Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "You brought trouble on me by making me stink to the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites and the Perizzites. My numbers are few, and if they gather themselves together against me and attack me, I shall be destroyed, both I and my household." But they said, "Should he treat our sister like a prostitute?" Essentially, they're telling Jacob, we were right in defending what was right. Jacob, I think, had a more nuanced approach. Jacob understood that what Levi and Simeon did meant that he would be the enemy of the Canaanites and the Perizzites. The way Jacob says it is, you made me stink. When we're set for the defense of the gospel, just like Simeon and Levi, we have to understand our goal. They wanted to defend their sister. And I understand that. That was only right to defend their sister. And frequently, our goal is to bring people to come to a knowledge of God. Simeon and Levi didn't have the goal of making them mad at Jacob. That wasn't what they were trying to do. But it's what happened. And we're not trying to make people mad at God. We're trying to introduce people to God. Now, it may be that if you introduce people to God, they will respond with hostility. But don't ever fall into the trap that Satan lays for us, and he lays it out so silently, and he's so deadly with the way that he does it. Satan says, this is an either-or proposition. Either you stand up and defend Dinah, or you don't. Either you stand up and defend Dinah and fight and kill all of those men, or you don't. Satan presents this as an either-or proposition. Either you wear a t-shirt like that man wore in the Mall of America, or you don't. Either-or thinking is a trap. Simeon and Levi had some other options, didn't they? They could have petitioned Hamor for justice. They could have approached Hamor and said, your son Shechem raped our sister. We need you to execute justice. They didn't choose that. Instead, they chose to fight. And the end was, it made Jacob stink. Our goal in standing up for what's right, and we are going to stand for what's right, is not to make people mad at us. It's not to make people mad at God. Our goal is to bring them to know God. Do I know how to pick my battles? Well, not very well sometimes. I run my mouth off. I say things that I wish that I hadn't said. But you know what? I can do better. I'm not going to buy into Satan's trap. That's just Satan presenting me with something that won't meet the goal. Satan wins when I do that, because I make people mad at God. Shechem Shechem won. Because Shechem said, see how evil those people are? We wanted to do what they wanted us to do, and they killed us. Shechem won. Jacob started to stink. We're not going to go there. We're going to serve God. We're going to stand up together, and we are going to present God. We're going to defend what's right, and we're always going to stand for God. It's a wonderful thing about being on God's side. You always win. You always win. Put on Jesus. Be on his side. He's promised that he will defend us to God and to men. We just have to put him on. We do that in baptism. We identify with Jesus. What a great blessing it is. We're going to stand in just a minute. And Ted's going to lead us in a song. Why do you wait? Hard to know what to do sometimes, but we can stand up. And that's what we're going to do.